Welcome to the Dad Challenge Podcast. My name is Josh.
I'm Jeff.
And this is the podcast where we talk about things like...
I don't know. Why am I always in trouble? I think that's what we're probably going to talk about now.
This is... Today's podcast is really exciting because we got a really cool guest on. And we're talking about oil change for your marriage.
It's a noble idea.
Preventative maintenance.
Are you supposed to change the oil once every 17 years? Is that the way it goes?
Because that's basically what we're doing now.
You should probably do it more than that, right?
So yeah, we're talking about preventative maintenance. What can you do to actually get to, you know, a good humming relationship where things are smoothly running, everything's well oiled, and you know, you're just zipping along without having to get to those points where you break down and crash and flail and die?
Yeah,
we don't want that.
So hopefully we learn lots today. I'm hoping.
I'm excited. I love these interviews with these people, but I got a would you rather, Jeff. Your favorite segment of this podcast. Would you rather be put into arranged marriage with someone you don't love but are guaranteed stability, or take chances with love at first sight?
You know what's funny about this arranged marriage thing? I've actually heard good things about how sometimes they turn out. So if you're telling me guaranteed stability or taking this other love at first sight thing, I don't know. I might choose that arranged marriage just because you say you're guaranteeing stability. Because
yeah.
Obviously what that would mean is... you're going to maybe be in love with that person, I guess.
Or stability means at least you're not going to get, you know, beat to death and like abused or whatever, you know. Stability could be a lot of things.
I didn't go there, but I like it.
But a lot of things, I think we look down on arranged marriages, but maybe it's worth having a chat with someone who's had an arranged marriage, because I've heard horror stories and I've heard success stories.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I should know this better because I know my wife's told me stories, but I'm pretty sure she knows of somebody who did it or had an arranged marriage, yeah. Or it was kind of arranged, I think, sort of. But anyways, yeah, and the person that got married, like she was talking to them from work, yeah. They didn't think anything of it. Like, there was like, yeah, this culture, is a good thing.
If it's a part of your culture, it's kind of just expected. And it's like, hey, this is what we're going to do. And I think you trust your parents enough to find someone. I think it's a lot of Indian culture.
Yeah.
Where they're like, they trust their parents to find, oh, I know this beautiful woman. You know, you see all these rom-coms where with the Indian guy's like, mom, stop. But it's actually an interesting topic. We should explore that a little deeper,
sure.
I think.
So, I think too,
that's part of marriage.
I think the other good thing about it is you'd probably get like a couple of goats and maybe some money too.
I think, yeah, I think you, I'd
that's
like
a good
to,
deal.
I want to explore that. I also want to figure out, because I know we love our local culture of
what? Tell me.
Those Indian? People with the hats that drive around in horses and buggies.
Oh, Mennonites.
Oh my goodness. How do Mennonites, do they just go get to find someone? I don't know why I forgot the name of Mennonites.
I just want to know if that's going to hit the cutting room floor, if it's going to be in there.
What did I say?
Those people with the hats.
Where the hat? They all have the same hat. Just saying. I would like to see how they, like a hardcore Mennonite,
yeah.
Goes about getting married and finding a husband and all that stuff. Is it arranged?
We keep saying we're going to talk to Mennonites. I don't think a Mennonite's ever coming on here.
They don't listen to the podcast. They don't care.
I know, but we got to get one
we'll
on.
Go to them.
Because we keep saying.
Yeah, you're right.
Let's do it.
Mennonites and Chris Pratt. We always talk about these two things and none of it ever happens. Let's get on to it, because this, like, the interview we've got, it's like an hour.
What are you gonna? Are you okay? But what are you doing for this? Would you rather? Are you going the arranged marriage, or are you going love at first sight?
I'm love at first sight, dude. I'm very impulsive. I'm very impulsive.
You're gonna get murdered. She's probably an ex murderer.
But it's love.
No, you just felt it's shallow.
Man, when I was a teenager, I mean, I can't count the times I had love at first sight.
You fell in shallow love, yes. And she's gonna bury the axe deep in your forehead.
I'm gonna die.
Yeah.
I'd love to also talk to someone who did have a successful love at first sight story.
Oh, there's got to be some.
There's got to be some of those.
There's probably people that claim it. It's a load of bullcrap.
I wonder if you ever had those moments where, when before you were married, like you're on a bus or somewhere and you I lock eyes with a girl and you're like, you know, and there's a spark and you get off the bus and you never see them again. You ever wonder what could have been? Yeah, me neither.
Did I ever tell you the story about when Trish and I met?
No.
Oh, it's funny. She started working for this youth center that I was volunteering for. And she hates the story because she feels like I like slubbed her off.
Yeah.
But the way it worked was I didn't see her that night because I was doing some stuff. She'd come by to check it out and she met me in the hall and I was young. Like I had just turned 20, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have said that I was like that great with girls. And when she came up, she's like, hi, I'm so-and-so. She was in my face. I was kind of like, it caught me off guard. And I think I was like shy and dumb. And I was probably like, and then I went to the bathroom.
That's awesome.
And yeah, it's, I feel like an idiot because it's, I think a lot it's of not guys like a romantic, like, you know, first sight story, but I, and I feel bad for her because I think she thinks that I'm like, I think she still thinks 17 years later that I was a loser that night.
I have a story like that. I was, I had a, growing up, I was like, I don't know, younger. My first love, I guess you call it, first relationship. We're on the phone long distance and we're just, you know, we were passionately in like with each other at that point. Like we just like, it was a good
it was
summer.
A thing?
It was a summer of love.
Call a thing,
you know those
now.
Summers of love? Like we're just best summer of your life. We had one of those. Okay. And she's at school. She's out in another, you know, right across the country. And we're talking to each other on the phone every day for hours. And all of a sudden she drops the L-bomb. She dropped it on me.
She called you a loser?
Like, yeah.
That's mean.
What a loser. And she's like, you know what? I love you. And yeah. I'm like, oh, and hung up the phone.
I'm out.
I was like, oh, crap. And I called right back. I'm like, I'm really sorry. I didn't know how to react to that. And it was like, and we talked about it. That was kind of funny. But I mean, today, again, we're talking a lot about marriage stuff that I'm really excited about this. And we did the I Hate My Teenager podcast where we talk about things that we hate about our teenagers. Since we're talking about marriage today, it's really important that we get to the bottom of what our marriage is all about. And one of those things is, what is like the biggest pet peeve in your marriage? What does Trish do that's like, I will pay you $1,000 not to do that thing right now? you're going to be in trouble, bro.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to get in trouble. This is kind of shallow. Like, I used to be a person that was like, I'm the 10 minutes early to whatever I got to get to, guy. Because you know why? Because it actually gives me stress to be late, and I don't want to be disrespectful to time. And I want to account for the unknown. So if I know it's going to take me half an hour to get there, I want to leave with a buffer to know that if something, I need that. Trish has it calculated to the like exact second of arrival, and that causes me stress. It still causes me stress to this day. It frustrates me. But the thing is if we're ever late, I think she sometimes blames me. Like, it's like, oh, well, you weren't ready. You know, like, it'll come that. And it's probably because, I mean, I shouldn't be going to her either. You made us late. And I don't think I'm doing that. But if I were to allude to the fact that she might have been the one that made us late, I would get the old, well, you weren't ready either, right? Because it causes me stress and it causes me, and that's not who I am. So I guess that maybe
I'm very much like
shallow.
I get like, that's one of my pet peeves is like, maybe we'll get into
we're going to do a whole bunch of
grievances. We're
going
to do grievances.
A whole bunch of, this is grievances.
Let's do grievances.
Hey, you know, yeah.
I'm on the way out the door. I'm like you. I have to be early or giving me a buffer because I'm like, when I'm late or someone's late to me, it tells people that your time's more important than theirs. And that's not respectful. When we're walking in a mall, my wife does not keep to my pace and I will walk a kilometer. I will be gone. Bye. And she's back there. I'm like, just walk faster. Like, we ain't holding hands. I'm in the other store. I'm on the other side of the mall. I'm like, I'm just walking. I can't handle it. I can't handle the slow walk pace. Even if people in front of me, I don't know you. If you're walking slow, I hate you. I don't like you at all. Like, if you walk slow places and drive slow places, if you drive under the speed limit, you walk places really slow because you're just dawdling, I hate you.
Walk slow, but stick to your lane. Don't go six across. I hate that.
Yeah, those families
kick those
that
people
are just,
right in the spine.
So that's a grievance. My pet peeve with Kathy, not the slow thing, like I can get over that, but I think one of the things that really bugs me the most, let me think about it. Man, when she doesn't, okay, if she texts me and I call her because I'm driving or something, and she doesn't answer the phone. You just texted me 14 seconds ago. Where did you go? Where's your phone? You throw it in the garbage? Did you throw it out on the roof of the house? Where is your phone? I get very mad about
that. You don't
like that. Hate it.
Answer your phone is what you're saying.
Answer your phone. I try to answer my phone. Sometimes I won't answer my phone because I want her to see what it's like to be like, I'm not answering my phone. And she'll get so mad. I'm like, what do you think?
Don't you ever, though, like, you get a text from somebody and, like, you know, you kind of respond. And then, I don't know, sometimes I'll put it, I don't always feel the vibration in my pocket. So Trish sometimes will text me and then it's like, she doesn't even give me a second to, like, respond to the text. It's like, hello, 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 text, ping, ping. I'm like, I want to snap. Like, give me a second to breathe.
I'm just thinking, you just texted me. The phone is clearly still in your hand.
I get it. Yeah.
Pick it up. What do you think is Trish's biggest pet peeve with you? Because they're going to come on the podcast next time and talk about their pet peeve. What do you think she's going to say?
She's going to say that he doesn't paint the trim. He's a deadbeat.
That's it.
No, that won't be it. You know what? Trish, too. Yeah. And does this bug me or do I love it? Let's keep going.
It's endearing.
Trish is such a hard worker.
Okay.
That sometimes it exhausts me.
Okay.
Which sounds stupid, but it's like, sometimes at 9 o'clock at night, I don't want to be doing anything anymore. I just want to like not do anything. I want to sit down.
Yeah.
And I don't want to think about tomorrow. I don't want to think about what hasn't been done. I just want to sit.
We don't need to make plans for the next 10 years.
But Trish is like, she's a planner,
yep,
which is awesome. I'm thankful for it. But at the same time, sometimes it makes me feel like, I don't know, I guess sometimes I feel useless or like I'm not contributing to that. So it makes me feel guilty. I don't want to feel guilty that I want to like chill. And I mean, if she heard me saying this, she'd be like, we do relax. But I'm like, I think I might need a little bit more.
We do relax for 14 seconds before we go to sleep.
Yeah.
No, I'm probably the Trish in my marriage where I'm always going, what's next? What's next? And Kathy's like, I just want to eat this like popsicle right now. I'm like, we need to do that. Like last night, we're just writing, like we had to go over something and I'm like, yeah, can we do this right now? And she wants to watch Big Brother and her stupid dumb shows that she watches. Like the dumbest show. She watches the dumbest show. That's another pet peeve. She watches this. We don't like things together on Netflix anymore.
Neither do we.
A couple of rare things.
We've run out.
Can't watch her. I can't watch her shows.
Does
they're
she
trash.
Watch horse shows?
No.
Trish loves horse shows.
No. Kathy likes like that. What's that fire show? Like Chicago PD don't or something. I don't know. It's stupid.
Tell her to stop watching
it. It's just like bad. She likes Big Brother and like, she still watches Survivor. Who's still watching Survivor? It's been on for 400 years. Stop watching it.
Still
stop
on?
Stop making the show, dudes. Yeah. Stop really? Making Survivor. It's the same dang show every 2 months. They get on there, everybody fights, and someone wins, and they all smell.
So if they watch such crappy things, if they take this podcast over, they're not allowed to talk about what they're watching because it sucks.
Yeah, because I want people to see how unenlightened they are.
Talk about horse shows and Survivor.
What's another thing that really gets my goat here in this marriage? What was I doing? I was cleaning the garage. I was Marie Kondoing my garage today hard. Okay? I went through all my tools, I just did everything.
You cleaned that thing up?
I cleaned it. Do you go see that garage? You can eat off the floor.
I saw your car parked on the road. It looks like there's like people living in it.
All the kids had to get all the things they're donating because we're getting rid of it all.
Okay, that's why it looks like that?
Yeah. Okay. And I kicked the kids out. They're living in the car now. But okay, so I mean, yeah, we can go on forever, but I mean, that's grievance. Do you have any more grievances before we move on?
No, and all that being said, I still really like her.
Yeah, we'll talk about it at the end of the show, though, because we want to leave right now on this note that we're like super pissed at her about how first world bad problems we have. Man, I can't get
wives.
Who ate all the chips?
Oh, let's go to that one. How did you do? What are you reading my mind?
I don't know.
You want to know what? Okay, so here's me. This is me. And I know we're different, right?
Yeah.
You and I. If I go to the grocery store, which I do a lot because of how I work, like I work different hours than Trish, so I'm usually the one that goes and gets like groceries for dinner or whatever. If I see like chips or cookies on sale, I will buy them because they're on sale. And I'm like, hey, that's a good deal. We're probably going to need those on a weekend. If I bring them home, Trish and all the kids, she has tainted the kids with this, horrible attribute.
With this toxicity.
Yeah. They eat them. And then I'm accused again because, you shouldn't have brought them in the house. That's what it is. I'm like, I'm trying to save us money. And you guys think that Tuesday is chip and cookie day, which doesn't make any sense.
Jeff, you need to be, you've been married for like 17 years.
Yes.
Why are you not on this level yet? Do you not have a hiding spot? What's your problem?
She finds it every time. That's the other thing.
Dude,
she's like a detective.
You need to do the baseboards? She's been on you about doing the baseboards. You need to create
like
a hidden
cabinet.
Wall. Dude,
yes.
Let's video that. Let's make a secret snack wall on your side of the bed that pops open snacks in it.
Snack wall.
I had some Skittles in bed last night.
It's going to have like a code, though, that she cannot know because she will figure it out.
We need to do this. Dad snack wall that has a code on it. No one can touch it. If you want chips, I'll lock in. I'll walk over. I'll put the pad in. I'll give you something.
I'll get you some chips, but nobody can know either.
Nobody can touch it.
Yeah.
Dad Snack Wall coming soon from Dad Sean's podcast.
Be electrified too if they even try to put it in.
They come close.
Yeah.
They get tasered.
It's going to be retinal scan. That's what I need.
Imagine a retinal scan chip dispenser. I mean, today it's a special day. We don't have to go through all the dad jokes, but do you have one?
I got a dad joke.
Oh, you do? Okay, go.
Oh, I was actually gonna try to slide this one in as casual conversation, but I bought a new pair of shoes from a drug dealer.
Oh.
I'm not sure what he laced them with, but I've been tripping all day. Yes! That's not bad.
That's a pretty good one, actually. I'll give you that one. That gets a small applause.
Yeah,
that's not like, the Price is Right womp sound. That's a small applause.
Four New Balance,
Four New Balance out of 10. That's a good 5 or 6.
That's a 5 or 6? That's a laughed. Middle of the road?
That's a middle.
You did.
What are you watching?
I wish I could have got that in. You know what? I don't have any big thing, but what I watched a trailer that I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the Joaquin Phoenix Joker trailer?
Yes.
I am pumped for that. That looks awesome because it doesn't look like the same crap that DC normally puts out. Yep. I'm sorry. DC puts out crap.
Yep.
If you ask me.
Except for The Dark Knight. Should take that one and make all movies based on that style of darkness.
Yes. Who's the director of that one? Not M. Night Shyamalan.
It's the guy who does Star Trek. Shyamalan.
Yeah. Who is it? The guy that does Star Trek?
I think so.
Yes. Make him make all DC movies and never let anyone else ever touch them. Because I agree. Those Dark Knight movies were unbelievable.
Okay.
But anyways, the trailer for that, I just love how it's like, it's more of like a character study or something.
You're
like,
actually going to like him, I think. You're going to see his justification for being a criminal.
And so there's an interesting, I mean, this is kind of nerding out, and it's only because I watched the trailer and I loved it so much, I got into one of those rabbit holes, you know, the downward spiral on YouTube. And they were talking about how it's weird that how old he is, because he's like 40, right? So they're almost wondering if...
Joker's 40 in the movie or Joaquin?
Joker. Okay, he's like 40 in the movie, but they've always made out the Joker to be the same age as Batman.
Yeah.
Right? So what they're saying is maybe this is like a Joker character that then the actual Joker is like a disciple or something. So, I mean, that's nerds nerding out and trying to come up with why would this guy be older? Whatever. You see the makeup they put on him?
Oh, it looks
like John Wayne Gacy.
Yeah.
Freaks me out.
It's going to be creepy. And I'm excited for it.
But you see him like how he's just getting broken down. Like it was only like a minute and a half trailer. And I'm like, I can't wait for this movie.
Joaquin's an amazing actor.
Yeah, he's good.
Dude, when he was in Gladiator and he was playing that role of like,
I hate his guts.
Exactly. Because he's a good actor.
Yeah, for
sure. I think you're going to see, here's my prediction for this movie. And I'm excited for it. Is that you're going to see Batman at the end.
You think so?
Yep. I think he's going to just like be a flash of a cape or something. You're going to see it.
Cool.
Or but someone's not, born or something.
Not Ben Affleck.
Or no. Can we forget about that whole, like, I'm not saying, I love Ben Affleck, don't get me wrong, I do like his acting.
I like him too,
he
but
did
I did not
need
not,
to be Batman.
No, and I'm sorry. That movie was horrible, the one with Superman, I hate the Superman terrible. Movies too.
Here's though,
you just should watch, just make I watch Chris DC. Pratt yeah. every superhero.
I agree.
Chris like, Pratt?
What are they even thinking?
Even Wonder Woman, I think he'd be a hot Wonder Woman too.
You know what though, I love Chris Pratt, I don't think he could do Batman though.
Chris Pratt could do anything.
Maybe. I'd have to see it. I don't think he could do the Joker.
You take it back.
I take it back. I did though watch a DC movie that wasn't terrible. Aquaman. Actually
Are
good,
you serious?
Dude. Actually good.
I look at that and I hate it. Nope. I hate even
and
looking
I
at it.
I was exactly the same. I was thinking the same thing because DC has like burned me on like their movies.
And it
this
was good?
Was good.
Really?
CGI, story, fight scenes, sick.
All
it
right.
was good.
All
and
right.
the girl, whoever she is, super hot.
You're not going to let me down on this one?
I'm giving it a 6.8 New Balance out of 10.
That's not bad.
It was good.
That's almost
what's
as good
his name?
As my joke.
The super hot guy that plays Aquaman.
Yeah, I know, but
he's hot, dude.
Well, he's ripped.
Yeah, and hot. He's got the hair and the muscles and the.
That's true.
I wish I was hot. it was hot. A good movie. So it was definitely a good movie. What are you listening to? Anything good?
I started listening to a weird podcast, which I don't know if it's weird. 99% Invisible.
Never heard of it.
It's been around like since 2010.
Wow, okay.
And they kind of talk about, I think it's San Francisco where they started, but they basically talk about the things that you kind of like walk past every day.
Okay.
And give kind of like an insight. So the first season's like a lot of stuff in San Francisco, like talk about library, they talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
And they talked about, one of the newer episodes was they talked about Warsaw in Poland
mm-hmm.
and how they rebuilt it after... the war,
yeah,
because it was decimated,
yeah.
And their plan was they wanted to rebuild it like basically like it was, but they kind of went into depth about how they kind of rebuilt it the way it was, and they did some other weird things,
yeah.
And so basically, the people of Poland hate the old downtown,
the new old
downtown. They hate it. It's like a tourist attraction, mm-hmm. garbage to them. It's like all a facade.
Yeah.
Anyways. Just
that's interesting.
Yeah, it's a weird, like, it's kind of intriguing. Like, I just keep listening to more episodes.
I'm not really, I'm still listening to Crime Town, which I love.
Yeah.
But today I was just cleaning the garage and I just put on the old John Mayer, man. John Mayer helps days go by.
Hmm.
That is somebody I would love to interview in this podcast.
You want
John Mayer?
John Mayer?
Oh, my goodness. John Mayer is like, musically, John Mayer of our time, my generation, is the most prolific songwriter and guitar player in my generation.
He's the songbird of our generation.
He is John Mayer songs are just nobody touches what that guy does.
Yeah.
He was my saving grace when I was on tour, my first tour in a van full of people I didn't really want to be with.
Wow.
I put the John Mayer record Room for Squares on. That guy saved my life.
Yeah.
I loved Room for Squares. Wow. Everything that guy does and touches is just, he is going to be like legendary, like obviously Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He's going to be like, yeah, he's on level with like the best and he doesn't get overlooked. He's the best of the best. He's like my favorite. So John Mayer, you're listening to this podcast, we would love to have you on the show. He's not Absolutely. A dad or anything, I don't think. He might be illegitimately. You never know with that lifestyle. But you know what I like about John Mayer? He collects watches. Apparently he spent vast amounts of his fortune on watches.
So he's got a fetish, eh?
Yep, watch fetish.
Watch fetish.
But anyway,
watches are cool. If I had lots of money, I'd probably buy a watch.
I also would. If I had tons of money, I would definitely have nice watches. I would.
I don't know if people realize this, but that Christmas video we did when we were in the hot tub, those weren't real Rolexes.
Don't tell them that. Why would you say that?
It's camera tricks. People need to know.
Where did you get them, Jeff?
Walmart. And I took them back.
Rolexes. You took them back
I took them back after. I rebuilt all the packaging.
Did it look good?
Yeah, it looked awesome. Dude, they took them back, no problem.
And here's a little secret, and maybe I shouldn't say this, but we've launched Fashion Friday, which I'm actually starting to love.
I love Fashion Friday. Yeah.
Are we getting some hits on that? People like it.
I got to get my face better, I feel.
Yeah,
I got to fix my face.
That's our first shoot.
I got to get like my...
Smolder?
My smolder, my pouty lips going. Yeah, I got to do
Instagram
that.
Looks...
You got like a snarl that I like. It's like...
I'm always behind the camera, so it's kind of weird to be in front of the camera.
No, you look good, man.
But we're working it. I think
I
it's good.
I my face.
But one of the things Jeff and I do is we go to the mall. I think it's my turn next.
Should we say this?
Should we say it?
I don't know.
We're saying it. Because we're not... Look... We know it looks good. We just can't afford those things. So what we do, Jeff, it was Jeff's turn last time. Dropped what? It was a G.
It was over a G.
It was a G on clothes for those things that you saw.
It's a lot of clothes.
It's a lot of clothes, and they look really nice, and they were really nice clothes. Like, yeah. It really does make a difference when you wear nice clothes. It really does.
Yeah.
So it's my turn next to go drop a bunch on some clothes and help you guys look good. So basically we're doing that for you dads out there and men out there to be like, it's important to look good, and there's ways to look good without spending a G. There really is.
Yeah.
And we just want to show you that, especially as bigger dudes. I consider us right down the middle. Like, we're average guys. Like, we're over 200 pounds. Most guys were about average like that. Dads are big, I think, too. Not a lot are, like, super skinny and not are super morbidly obese. We're kind of right down the middle.
Yeah.
And we're saying, look, you can look good with receding hairlines, all the things that we're struggling with, and we want to just empower you dads to just be like, I really like what he did there. It's cool to wear colors. It's cool to be a little bit flashy here and there, and just like be confident in what you do. And so today's episode is basically be confident in your marriage too. There's ways. We got this guy on named Nate Bagley.
Yeah.
And he's from a podcast called The Loveumentary. All right, let's get to the interview. So, man, we're so excited. We've got Nate Bagley here from, where are you from, Nate?
I'm in Salt Lake City.
Utah?
Yeah.
Holy smokes, you got all the Mormons down there. Are you Mormon?
I am.
Oh, this is great.
Yeah.
I was at the airport the other day, and there was a Utah flight, and there's all these Mormons wearing their tags, their badges.
Yeah, the missionaries.
So they're supposed to wear that everywhere they go.
Yeah, so that's for cool. I'll tell you all about this. This is interesting. So for between 18 months and 2 years of your life, when you're like right after you graduate high school, you go on a mission. It's not required, but a lot of members of the church do it. And those are the stereotypical Mormons that you see in like the white shirts and ties with the little name tag or the dresses and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So if you ever see a Mormon that's dressed up like that, they're a missionary and they are out for probably a solid 2 years doing like service work and proselyting and stuff like
Holy
that.
They're
a very rigorous schedule.
Wow.
I don't know. And this girl at first, okay, I'm just going to say it. She looked like an Instagram model. And then I saw this little badge. And I'm like, holy, like, I guess I don't know. I don't know how it works, but like, she's like, very, very looked like a model. How do I say that?
She's
talking to people. Yeah, she's talking to people at the airport. And I'm like, that's probably good for missions, I guess, if you want to get people at your church. But anyway,
I've been told that there are Mormons are a very beautiful people. Like if you go to BYU campus, it's hard to find an unattractive person there.
I concur because we're in Canada. We don't have a lot of Mormons up here. But I knew a Mormon girl way back in the day before I was even married, and like all her friends who are Mormons, I'm like, What's it? What do you? What's in your water? Like what? What
it's
is
just
the,
a prerequisite that you just have to be. You have to be sexy.
Otherwise,
to be
you get booted.
Yeah,
you're excommunicated if you're ugly.
Yeah, I have a really strict diet at my house because I know if I get fat, I get kicked out of the church.
That's awesome.
Okay, that's, Gary, all, that's all a lie, by the way.
Oh,
I know.
We're cutting out that's a lie.
We're leaving it. Okay, cool. So Nate, tell us a little bit about just like who you are, what you do. I don't want to give too much away, but just let us know what it is that's like your passion, what you do, your day to day things, and give us kind of a high level overview of what you do.
Yeah, man. My goal in life is to help rid the world of mediocre love. I want people to have like the most legendary, amazing relationships that are possible. And I know like most people don't take a relationships class in college. Like most colleges don't even offer them. Mm-hmm. Or this isn't something that most people just naturally learn about. You kind of expect that you're going to meet somebody, fall in love, and if it's the right person, it'll just work out. But the fact of the matter is, you know, roughly 50% of marriages end in divorce, and relationships are complicated, and they can become really difficult and frustrating, and they can also be the most beautiful and fulfilling and meaningful thing in your life. And my goal is to try and help people have more of the latter than the former. I want to rid the world of mediocre love. So that's kind of my mission.
That's a good goal.
Thanks, man.
How do you do it?
Well, I'll tell you the short version of the long version. So a couple of years ago, I had this question. I was single. I knew one day I wanted to be married, and I knew that if I got married, I wanted to be the kind of husband that my wife would like brag about to her friends. I wanted my wife to go hang out with her friends for a girls' night and say things like, "Oh my gosh, my husband is so amazing. Let me tell you all the amazing things about my husband." Instead of being the complainer, instead of saying that I'm the extra toddler that she has to take care of or whatever. But if you examined my dating life up to that point, I could barely keep a relationship alive for two or three months, let alone keep a woman happy for the rest of my life.
Right.
And so I figured that the common denominator in all my relationships was one, that they ended in a breakup, and two, I was a part of them. So if I wanted to have this amazing relationship one day, I had some introspection to do. So I ended up kind of in dramatic fashion quitting my job and spending the better part of a year traveling all over the United States, interviewing couples from all walks of life who were in love with each other, with the goal of trying to figure out what it is that these amazing couples did, that golden thread that ran through all of these relationships that everybody else was missing out on. And that's kind of how it started. And I started this podcast, and then the podcast kind of had this cascading effect. And I started teaching courses, and I started putting on events. And now that's what I do, is I have kind of like an online school where people can come and do these amazing challenges where we try and kind of gamify relationships. And then we have these big date night events that I put on every couple of months, and we get hundreds of couples to show up, and we give away tons of prizes, and we have like magicians come or like other entertainers. And then we also throw in some really cool education stuff, and people leave feeling even more in love than when they showed up. That's the goal.
That's cool.
Holy Thanks, cow. I can't believe you did that before you got married. I think I'm going to go figure out how to be the best husband ever.
Something tells me that Nate is a planner.
I'm not letting my wife listen to Nate.
I'm sorry, Jeff. I'm sorry.
You speak at events, obviously, and you hold these evenings where you know, people get connected. So like when you're doing these events, and like, obviously it's your full-time job now, right? Am I right?
Yep. This is what I do all day, every day.
Beauty. And so what's one of those questions at these events? And our podcast is obviously directed towards dads, so a lot of our stuff is going to be made mainly towards dudes, but we know a lot of wives are listening to this reconning, and we know it. Sure. If you're out there listening, we're happy you are, but this one's for bros.
Hi, ladies.
What's a question you get asked from like husbands who finally open up and say, what's one of the main things or concerns that they bring to you? Or, you know, let's say, what's one of the main concerns, and what's one of the main, like, here's what we did that worked for us?
Yeah, most people just tend to ask, like, wow, you went on this huge journey. What did you learn? What do I need to do to make my wife happy? What do I need to do to be a good husband? How do I fix all the stuff that I've screwed up in the past, you know? And I think one of the most important things that people... The most important advice that I would give to people that would make a massive shift in their relationship is to stop pursuing happiness.
Okay.
And instead pursue growth. Pursuing happiness is kind of rooted in a bit of a consumerist culture where mm-hmm. if you're not happy with your cell phone service or you're not happy with the place that you live or you're not happy with the car you drive, you can just go get another one. You can go upgrade. You can go change it. The way that we talk about marriages oftentimes now is very different than the way culturally we talked about marriages 20, 30, 40 years ago. You hear a lot about like startup marriages now, or you hear about, you know, having a first wife or, marriage. It's really easy to treat marriage as a little bit more disposable. Which,
expand on the startup, because to me that sounds like, you know, a tech startup.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, like a startup wife would be like you have this wife for your first 5 years while you figure out marriage, and then when things fall apart, you go find somebody else.
Wow.
Hmm.
Seems like, and that some people do that on purpose.
Yeah, it's becoming part of the lexicon. I think basically what happened, if you want to go back to the history of marriage, back in the 50s, so marriage therapy didn't even exist until like the 1950s, 1960s.
Yep.
And back in the 50s, marriage therapy was all about reinforcing. I'm not a therapist, but I've done a lot of research on this stuff. So the whole idea of therapy was reinforcing gender stereotypes. How do you, you know, mm-hmm. have the woman work at home and be happy, and the man go out to and provide for the family and kind mm-hmm. of create a workable relationship. And then in the 60s and the 70s, there was this huge liberation, and it was all about individual choice. It's all about like what's best for you. And it was all about providing space and opportunity for, especially for women who have been in abusive and oppressive situations, giving mm-hmm. them the freedom to get out of a relationship. Like in the 50s, if you got a divorce, you were branded as what today you'd be branded as, like a felon if you've been to prison.
Okay.
A divorcee back then, that if you got a divorce, it followed you. Like if a divorcee passed away 10 years after their divorce, they would have in their headline, like in the headline, in some dramatic fashion, divorcee passes away, or divorcee robs a bank, or something it became part of your identity. Yeah. And we still do that to this day, not necessarily with divorcees, but with other people who go through other experiences, you know, you look at sex predators, you know, people on the sex offenders list, you get labeled and you carry that label with you for the rest of your life. That was very similar to how it was back then. So in the 60s and 70s, there was a huge liberation, and people had the ability to choose without having to carry that label anymore. And mm-hmm. it was all about like, is this marriage working for me? And if it's not, I can leave.
Right.
And then back up into the 80s, it became a lot more consumerist. Like things started becoming a little bit more disposable. Things became a lot more recyclable. And that's kind of what we've kind of carried into this current conversation about marriage is, you know, is this what I want? If it's not, I can go find something else.
Has it shifted from being now, because as different generations get married and go through their things, has it shifted from disposable? Yes, maybe, but to more like you do you, you celebrate you, you make sure this is what you want for you and you and you. I find that my generation specifically, I'm 39, has been brought up now. And now this next generation has been said to be like, hey, if you ain't happy, peace out. If you're not, this is for you. Self-care, self-love, treat yourself, you. So it ends up becoming, that's what I'm saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, but more of a selfish way of saying, if you're not happy, peace out.
Yes. Yes. And the problem with using happiness as the foundation for your relationship or the quality of your relationship is that happiness is fleeting. Like it's impossible to be happy all the time. Mm-hmm. I would argue it's even impossible to be happy most of the time.
Yeah.
And the problem with happiness is that any random thing can make you unhappy. Like you could go to Chipotle and get diarrhea and that would make you unhappy. You know, you could be having a great day and then you could open up Twitter and you could see a tweet from like President Trump and it could just piss you off. There are all sorts of random things that can make you unhappy. And if you're basing your marriage on a foundation of happiness and any random thing can make you unhappy at any given time, it's a very shaky and unstable foundation. So my argument and the argument of many of the leading marriage experts that typically don't have a podcast, they will write a couple of good books and most of them are just really good researchers, but they say the best foundation for a marriage, for a really fulfilling marriage, for a gratifying marriage, for a marriage that feels deeply connected and that lasts a lifetime, is to have a foundation of growth. Okay. And the cool thing about growth is that when you bump into a problem, when you bump into an obstacle, maybe it's financial, maybe the you're having struggles in the bedroom, maybe it's struggles raising kids. Like, it could be a thousand different things, just mm-hmm. your typical argument. When you have a growth mindset, all of a sudden that obstacle, that struggle develops meaning and purpose. And the meaning is, wow, who I currently am as a husband is not getting me what I want out of this relationship. So what is it that I need to change about myself? How do I need to evolve? How can I become better so that this problem doesn't exist anymore? And suddenly this obstacle that you're facing becomes the path forward to actually improve your relationship and make it better, to make you a better husband. And with that improvement comes a sense of satisfaction and happiness and fulfillment and joy. And so the happiness becomes a product. Yes. Yeah. Instead of being the goal, it becomes a byproduct that you naturally experience by pursuing growth, by pursuing this kind of evolution of the evolution of a husband. Like, how do I become how do I become a little bit better husband today than I was yesterday? And if I have that mentality every single day, the happiness is going to be a byproduct.
I think in this world of like likes and Instagrams and everything else, where we're like trying to show everybody our best face forward on social media, I see a lot of marriages. I know, I'm a pastor, so I see a lot of marriages, and we see a lot of the back end of things, and people will talk to us and trust us with their problems. But then the only thing they're putting forward is this idea that we're so happy. We just went to Disneyland. We just did this. We just did, you know. And I think part of it is that you want to pursue those moments, and you take those pictures as benchmarks and remember them as such. But I don't think it makes you happy.
No, it doesn't make you happy. It creates a facade of happiness. It's like counterfeit happiness. And then when you go to cash it into the bank, you really have nothing.
Yeah, I like what you're saying about happiness.
You like what I'm saying.
what I was getting at is with your wife making you happy, or vice versa, if you are a wife and you want your husband to make you happy, that's a lot of pressure to put on another human being, right? Like, you're a human being, and you want somebody else to be responsible for your happiness? That's almost insane, right?
Yeah, and it's disempowering.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, how crappy is that for your happiness to depend on the words and the actions and the thoughts and the feelings of somebody else?
Yeah.
Like, that's a crappy way to live your life, to hand over your happiness to somebody else?
Mm-hmm. Right.
No
so
way.
So, I like when you're saying about self-betterment, that's, I'm listening. But why do I suck at that so much?
Why we all suck at it?
It's because it requires a constant focus and dedication, and it's really easy to get distracted. So John Gottman is the godfather of marriage research. He wrote the book, The Seven Principles for Making Marriage Work. If you haven't looked at his work, it's fascinating stuff. He started clear back in the 70s. He created what's called the Love Lab in Seattle, and he would invite couples in. And he was interested in the science. Like, he's a mathematician. And so he'd invite couples to stay at this apartment building, in this little apartment. And they had cameras that filmed all of their facial expressions, and they wore heart monitors, and they took blood samples and measured their adrenaline and had them like reenact difficult conversations, and they would code their faces and stuff like that. And he wanted to know, like, at what point does somebody's adrenaline spike or their heart rate spike, or what, you know, he'd get urine samples and stuff like that, all sorts of interesting stuff. And for decades, he would follow these couples, and he based off of all the research and all the data he collected, it got to the point where he could watch a couple argue for 5 to 10 minutes and predict with over a 90% accuracy whether or not they were going to get divorced in the next 5 or 6 years.
Dang, that's some power to have.
Yeah. So this is research-based stuff. And one of his most famous quotes, one of his most famous teachings, is that it's the small things done often that make the difference. Okay. And so what he's trying to say is, it's like the little habits, the little choices that you make over every single day that build up on top of themselves that make the long-term difference in a marriage, whether it's successful or whether it's mediocre or whether it fails. And so these little things, like if you sat down and brainstormed 10 or 15 little things that you could do to make your wife blissfully happy every day, and then you made it like just an unbreakable commitment that every single day you're going to do these 10 or 15 small things, the big things in your relationship are going to be so much more manageable. So do you want me to give you some examples of little things?
Yeah, like because we're the Dad Challenge podcast, maybe part of the challenge this week is to challenge men to take down 10 things and do them for a week and see what happens.
I love a good... And start even smaller than that. Start with one thing. One thing for a week.
Yeah, one thing.
Let's do one.
So one great thing that I do every single day is when my wife and I come home from work, whoever's home, like... Doesn't matter who's home. I grab my wife and I pin her up against the wall and I give her a 10 second passionate kiss.
Okay. And wow.
All right.
Like, dang, man, it's easy to give her a peck.
You said 10 minutes?
10 seconds.
Okay. Geez. I'm like, man, I got things to do, bro.
So we all have things to do. Let's not get overeager. If you can do it for 10 minutes, do it for 10 minutes.
He said he touched her boob. I think he said he touched her boob.
He did touch.
Yes. There was a little boob raise.
You do grab the boob. Okay.
But it's one little thing that shows intention. It shows, I love you. I'm still attracted to you. I'm still invested in creating some passion and playfulness in our relationship. Something as simple as like a text in the middle of the day that says, hey babe, I'm thinking about you. I love you. Mm-hmm. A huge, huge thing is gratitude. Being grateful for the things, especially the things that, that your partner is supposed to be doing, the things that's kind of like their routine job, that if they stopped doing, your life would fall apart. But the fact that they do it, you typically don't notice it. Like I wrote an article a couple of weeks ago that, man, it was really interesting, but I said something about, a wife being grateful for her husband for helping put the kids to bed. And this woman got so angry and she's like, well, they're his kids too. It's his job. She shouldn't have to be grateful. Yes. And I was like, man, it's got to suck being married to you. Because like, what kind of partner do you want to be? Do you want to kind of be the kind of partner that makes your other partner excited to do things for you and feel appreciated all the time? Or do you want to be the kind of partner who just expects things of your partner, you know? And for me, I want to be the husband who, when my wife does the dishes, I want to say, thanks, babe. I really appreciate you doing the dishes. That means a lot to me. Or, hey, I noticed that you vacuumed today and made the bed. Like, it just looks so much nicer in here. I really, really appreciate it. I love you.
That's
notice the little details, because you the things that you reinforce are the things that your partner is going to do more of. Too many times we think that we can punish our partner into behaving better. If we just criticize them enough and tell them about the things that they're doing wrong enough, then suddenly they're going to step up and realize the error of their ways and be better. But really, the science and the research and the human behavioral studies show that it's the things that we notice that are positive that people are going to do more of.
One of the things I try to do as a person, especially in business, is that when I enter a meeting, it's like, hey, I try to find something to compliment them about or whatever it is, even if it makes them, okay, you look super handsome today. It might sound, you know, whatever. But I'll do something that whatever does is break down walls. And we had a guy on our podcast who's a psychologist saying, talking with our kids. We have an episode where we talk about how we hate our teenagers. But he said, he's very similar to what you're saying now. It's called building a bond. And so the way to build a bond is, one of them is to just be, hey, you look really good today. You did a good job, or you did this and this. I think it's different though when you speak to your kids as if you were to speak to your wife, because your kids could sound condescending if you said that to your wife. But I think in the other side, you're saying, hey, you know what? I noticed that you just been killing it lately, and I just wanted to let you know that I see it and I totally appreciate it.
Yeah, or even saying, babe, you look so sexy today. Like, how often do we say that?
That's true.
Probably not as often as we should or could.
Mm-hmm. See, I have to admit here that my wife is smart, because she tells me that she wants those things, and I'm still too dumb to pick up. Like, she does say, like, she says, I want you to be grateful for what I did. She wants people to say thank you if dinner's ready. And she's good at that, because I make a lot of dinners, and she'll say to me, thanks for dinner. Mm-hmm. I got to be smarter and be saying the same things to her.
Install a habit tracker on your phone. There's awesome habit tracker apps, and put on your phone a reminder every day. Say thank you to my wife. Or make it a bedtime routine. Like, do you brush your teeth every day?
It's
questionable.
Josh doesn't. I definitely do.
I am blessed, though, with genetically amazing teeth.
That is the worst excuse I've ever heard.
That is gross. I just threw up a little bit on my desk. You guys owe me a new MacBook Pro.
It wasn't me.
So just make this a habit. So when you brush your teeth, you tell your, you write a little message on your mirror. This something, a little note to your wife that says something you're grateful for her that day, grateful for about her that day. And if you don't write that thing on the mirror, that means you didn't brush your teeth, and that's disgusting. That's
nasty. You have to write it. You have to write it up there with your spit. Is that how that works?
Yes. just hawk a loogie, spit on the window.
Dry snot. I love sideways. You. Little heart. Yeah. Dry snot.
So another cool thing that my wife and I started doing recently is we ask each other the question every single day, what's one thing that I could do today to make you feel loved?
Okay. Oh, wow.
That is an easy way to set yourself up for success. Like, hey, honey, I want to make you feel loved. What can I do? And she says, empty the dishwasher. And I go, boom, done. I empty the dishwasher. She comes home and she goes, oh my gosh, you love me because you empty the dishwasher. Set myself up to be an awesome husband just by asking that one question every day.
Nice. What if my answer is the same every day?
We know you what you're
going to
ask.
You just want a blowjob, don't you?
We can go there. We can go there. I mean, yeah. We know it's, and you know, Trish will roll her eyes. She'll,
yeah.
But yeah, what I mean, at the same time, maybe it'll encourage them to ask the same question. And it doesn't, I mean, it doesn't have to be like, you know what I'm looking for, wink, wink. But at the same time, it could be something simple. Like, you know, I just really appreciate tonight that if, you know, we could just, you know, you can put the kids to bed or whatever it is, but what, this all sounds great. And you know, and I've been married for 11 years. Jeff, you've been married, what, 25 years?
Nope. 17.
17 years. 17. So here's the thing, as guys who have been married for quite a long time, we're kind of in the flow of it. We're still very, very, both of us are very happy in our marriages. Everything's kind of awesome, I think. But what about those days where you're like, you don't want to ask them that. You want to be like, I absolutely think right now I don't want to talk to you because you did something stupid, or you're angry and maybe you're justified, maybe you're not. What about those moments? Like, this kind of comes to this next question, which I was itching to ask, is what are some things we can do specifically to prevent the bad stuff from happening, so that we can have those days where we can get past all the crap that might be eating at us?
Well, a great thing about relationships is that they're a skill. A lot of people think they should come naturally. Relationships actually are the opposite of the thing that comes naturally to you. You know, they're a skill. They're something you need to learn, to practice every day. And the first step to being half average at something is to really suck at something. And so if you're having one of those days where you're kind of pissed off at each other, you're just not getting along, your partner said something that hurt your feelings or ticked you off or made you feel disrespected, which is typically what I get upset about, is I feel disrespected. I think a lot of men fall into that campground. For women, it's typically you hurt my feelings, and for men, it's like you totally disrespected me. And if that's the case, you got to learn how to make repair attempts. You got to learn how to fix that stuff up as quickly as possible. And that is a skill. That is definitely a skill. The research shows that the happiest couples on average have a ratio of 20 positive interactions to every one negative interaction. And during times of conflict, they have 5-to-1 ratio, five positive interactions to one negative interaction. That's just like one small thing that you can do in order to make sure that like these conflicts don't last long. So even when you're upset with each other, are you still able to like hold hands and look into each other's eyes and smile? Or can you say, hey, I understand why you might feel that way? Or can you say, I'm really upset, but I still love you? You know, can you be calm and still turn towards your partner in a moment of conflict or stress or frustration and, start to make those repair attempts towards each other?
Crossover guest, because what you're saying, Nate, and what, Dr. Kirk was talking to us about anger, he was saying the recovery time. He said, you know, sometimes you will get angry. We're humans. It's going to happen. But how you recover from that, you know, does it take you 2 days? Does it take you 4 days? So that's, you guys are both super smart.
Yep. Dude, my wife and I have built in a recovery time that is so short now. We had a huge fight a couple of months ago, like a big, one of those big, nasty emotional blow ups where I don't cry very often. For like, I cry during sad movies a little bit. I'll admit it.
Jeff does too. Like, yeah, Jeff does too.
But I rarely ever raise my voice with my wife, if ever. And I don't get angry at her, but some stuff happened, that I got really, really emotional, and I knew I would either scream at her and say things I would regret, or I would just like erupt into tears, and I erupted into tears. And she was really hurt and I was really hurt, and we both went off into our own separate areas of the house and simmered for about 20 to 30 minutes. And then we got together and we had a meaningful, heartfelt conversation. And after that 30 minutes, 45 if you count this conversation, it was over. And afterwards we talked about it and I was like, this is the kind of thing that would have set some couples off for a week or even a month. Like they would have been giving each other the silent treatment. They would have shut down. They would have been punishing each other, holding a grudge. And it's hard for me to recall even the details of the event at this point, because we practiced so hard and mastered moving on and having that short recovery time so that we can move on with life and be connected and manage things together.
And that becomes an expectation, because you know that even during that moment, you're like, okay, well, I'm going to be pissed for a bit. She's going to be pissed for a bit, but we know we know we can come back from this.
Yeah. And one of the things that's been really helpful for me with regards to situations like this is learning to apologize. And one of the breakthroughs that helped me make a shift is, I think a lot of people, when they hate apologizing because they feel like they have to admit that they're wrong. It feels kind of like a judge criminal relationship where the person who's hurt is the judge and is like waiting for the criminal to come in so they can sentence them to their punishment. And the criminal has to come in with their tail between their legs and be like, I'm really sorry that I did all these things. And could you please let me off the hook? And they have to admit all the bad things that they did and be wrong. And then the judge might grant them, clemency and let them go, or they might punish them more. And it's just like a disempowering and ugly, and it doesn't feel good, and people don't look forward to being a criminal. And I made the shift recently in my brain that the real relationship that you should have when you're apologizing, especially in your marriage, is the doctor-patient relationship. So if I've hurt my wife's feelings, I'm the doctor and she's the patient. She's hurting. So if she comes to me and says, hey, I'm in a lot of pain, this thing happened that you did and I'm really hurting because of it, I have an opportunity as the doctor to cure her, to take away the disease, to take away the pain, to help do whatever I can to repair the damage that she experienced. And it's a gift that I can give her. And it doesn't mean I have to admit that I was wrong. It just means I have an opportunity to heal my partner. So when my wife comes to me and she's hurting, the first instinct that I have is, how can I make this better? How can I make you feel better? What are the words that you need to feel whole and complete again? And sometimes she'll say something like, the tone that you used when you said that thing to me earlier, I don't know if you meant it or not, but it really hurt my feelings. And I can go, babe, I'm so sorry I used that tone. I did not want to hurt your feelings. And she goes, thank you. I feel way better. And that's all it takes. And I'm like, all I had to do was speak the words back to you that you gave to me in a way, in an effort to heal you. And all of a sudden you feel better. I've done my job as the doctor. Like I am good. And when I approach these conflicts with that mindset, with the I'm taking the role of the doctor, it completely changed everything for me.
I think also to just kind of add to that is that if you approach any situation in your marriage, bad or good, if you make it a competition to outgive one another, eventually, because it's, I think a lot of people feel like, oh, I give everything and I don't get anything back, or this and this, and it's always give take. Tonight my wife and I had a, not an argument, just kind of like a flare up about, like, the kids spilled a bunch of water. I had just finished cleaning I just Marie Kondo'd my garage. Okay. Nothing sparked joy. And I went to the
nothing
dump
and
I
was,
I worked my arse off today and I was so tired. She did too. She did some stuff. And then I took her to the dump and I basically was an expectation. Like, I worked really hard. Can you go clean? Then she got mad, 'cause she's like, I did too. So here's the thing to add to that is just to say, look, if you outgive one another, if it's a competition to outgive each other, I think you'd just be happier. Like, you know what? Just like, who cares if I already worked tons? I'm just going to do this for you. 'Cause if you try to outgive, if you're apologizing, even if you're wrong, even if you're right, whatever it is, you're just trying to make something happen. And I think you touched on something really important there. Outgive, out-apologize, do things above and beyond what you think you need to do. And if you're not being reciprocated on that, which I think sometimes can happen, I've read tons of horror stories on that then it's something else.
That's the danger, though, in making that a competition. You should be doing that, though, because that's what you want to do to make the relationship better. It shouldn't be a competition, right?
Well,
otherwise, you're going
to
get pissed.
Yeah, meaning to say that I'm just going to do this because I'm going to outgive because it just be. I know it's like a weird way of saying it, but you're saying you're outgiving, out apologizing just because you're like, I'm just going to do it, and it's just because I'm going to. I want to do it because I want to do it, not to receive something in the end, because you're giving.
Yeah, yeah. You don't want it to do it. You don't want it to be transactional.
Yes.
But you do have to be careful. Like, I had a really interesting conversation with Dr. John Townsend, the guy who wrote Boundaries. I don't know if you guys are familiar with his work, but one of the things he says is there's like a really careful balance between giving from a place of generosity and giving from a place of resentment. And you don't want to give so much. Like, giving from a place of resentment is not a gift well received by anybody. Like, I know when somebody's giving me something out of obligation and it doesn't feel good to receive that gift. So whenever that is the case, when you feel like you're giving and you're becoming resentful of the way that you're giving to your partner, there's a boundary issue there. And, yeah. Boundaries are meant to protect the things that are most important to you. Make sure that you let the good things in and keep the bad things out. And if you're, my guess is that if you're feeling resentful in your marriage, because you're giving too much, it's because you're probably not taking care of yourself. So there's like a really, it is possible to overgive is the kind of the thing I want to point out. Having a giving competition is great as long as you're giving from a place of generosity. And if you ever feel yourself slipping into that feeling of resentment, you need to go back and analyze your life and figure out, you know, what is it that I am needing right now to recharge my batteries so that I can start giving from a place of generosity again.
Yep.
Yeah. Very good. I hear you say too, that it has to have sincerity, right?
Yes.
It has to be sincere. Yeah, because if it's not, I mean, you know, do you have kids, Nate? Sorry.
Not yet. And no, you don't have to apologize.
So, well, I feel like I should have asked you before. But anyways, like I've got teenagers, and three of them, and I know that obligation thing you said. Like if you say to them, you need to apologize for that, sorry, right? Like that's what they give you. You know that's not a real sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, you're teaching them the motions of what a human being does when they do something. But I mean, there's no sincerity in being forced to say sorry.
Here's a question. So what can you do? Like I said, what can we do to prevent? So we're talking about oil change for a marriage, meaning like you're changing the oil before things get bad, before everything seizes, before things explode and get broken. And a lot of those things are really cool. It's the small things that matter. Small things. And I love that. But what are some of the biggest mistakes we make, like that you've seen or that you as a pattern or that you think, you know, whatever in your travels experience, what do we do? What are we messing up on that we're like, stop being such a douchebag and stop doing that thing?
A good place to start. First thing that popped in my mind is you said oil change. How often do you change your oil in your car?
Every 5,000.
Every 5,000 miles.
We're Canadian, so we're on the real system. Kilometers.
Yeah. 5,000 kilometers. Got it.
Yeah.
How often would you say, like, time-wise, is every 2 or 3 months?
Three months.
Yeah. So I would love to take that oil change idea and put that exact idea into a marriage context. So every 3 months, you should be going on a date night every week or so. You know, every week or two, you should be spending one-on-one time with your partner where you're not talking about logistics and you're not talking about the kids, but you're out having fun, doing something new, trying to recharge your batteries and have a little excitement and passion in your marriage. Mm-hmm. Every 3 months, make one of those date nights a sit down and like a real deep assessment of your relationship. Maybe you go to a workshop, maybe you go to therapy to do a little check-in. Maybe you just sit down and like have a questionnaire that you go over, like how are we doing financially? How are we doing physically? How are we doing spiritually? How are we doing emotionally? My wife and I do a relationship inventory every single week where we go over some of these questions. I ask my wife every single week on a scale from 1 to 10, how was I as a husband last week? And what's one thing that I could do to be better next week? And I try and take notes on that stuff, you know?
This guy's a stud.
Well, dude,
this guy gets laid all the time.
I want to have a great marriage, man.
And yeah, no, that's awesome.
You got to keep a pulse on things. Like, I think a big mistake that we make is we go on autopilot and we don't check in. And then 6 months goes by and we even if you're 1 or 2 degrees off of center, if you walk far enough, like you're going to be miles off of your target destination.
That's absolutely true.
You know what I mean?
So you let it get too long and then you end up becoming roommates and then you're coasting and then you go too far and you can't get back. Sometimes.
So find a way to course correct every week. Simple questions. On a scale from 1 to 10, how did I do as a husband this week? What could I do to be better next week? What went great last week? What do you want to see more of this next week? What did I do poorly last week that you want me to maybe avoid doing next week? And if you start asking your wife these questions, she's going to start asking them back to you. But start doing it selfishly. Like, I don't want to have a miserable wife because a miserable wife means a miserable life. Mm-hmm. It's not fun to be married to somebody who's just unhappy to be with you all the time. So what are the little things that I could do to make you feel great? You know, and ask for the wins too. You know, what are the things I did great last week? And then you get to like hear what means something. I did an experiment once where I made dinner for my wife almost every night 1 week, and I cleaned the house and I bought her flowers and I gave her that passionate kiss that I told you about.
Yep.
And then at the end of the week, I asked her, like, what is the thing that I did this week that meant the most to you? And she's like, oh, by far the kiss. And I'm like, that required the least amount of effort out of all of those things. Mm-hmm. And I started kind of hacking my relationship. I'm started to collect the things that meant the most to my wife. So I knew that I could be investing in the things, the right things. So making dinner for her every night isn't that big of a deal because she likes to cook. But giving her that passionate kiss, she can't get that anywhere else. So I got to make sure that I'm filling that tank. And like, how can you hack your wife? How can you find out the list of 15 or 20 things that just mean the world to her when you do them and make it easy on yourself? Like, make being a successful husband easy on yourself. You just pull from that list every single day. What's one thing I can do on this list today to make her feel good? She loves flowers. Okay, I'm just going to get her, make sure that she always has a bouquet of fresh flowers. I'm just going to go to Trader Joe's. They're $4. It's not that big a deal. I get every Wednesday. I'm going to put it on my calendar. I'm going to leave work 10 minutes early and I'm just going to grab that bouquet of flowers and come home and stick them in the flower vase and not even say anything about it and just watch her light up when she walks in the room. Like, yeah. Make that list.
See, this one's hard for me because my wife just wants suitcases full of money.
And that's unrealistic.
No, I'm just kidding. That's not true.
Trish does not.
Well, then I would go take all of your cash and turn it into pennies because that's going to go a longer, that's gonna go a longer
really
way.
You must really love me. I love that idea, hack your wife, which could mean a lot of things for a lot of guys. Be like, how do I hack her to do those other things that were... one of the things we had a guy on our podcast a while ago, Tony DiLorenzo from One Extraordinary Marriage, and he said he had a really cool thing to say. He said... what did he say? Holy smokes. Let me gather.
I'll remember
in here.
You'll remember. I believe in you. It Tony's will. Good dude.
He just said like, you know, find the thing that really works and just, and go for it. Like ask, I think it was a question. This is the sex side of things. So
yeah.
When we're talking about being happy about certain things, you got the guy who generally is not all the time, who's the high desire type in the marriage. I'd say 80% of the time.
Yeah, that's a pretty close statistic. Yeah.
So you're finding things like you're talking about questionnaires. Maybe every 3 months you sit down and you do the 19 questions where you get them online and you say, here's, or not the same questions, but maybe one of the 3 months you sit down and you say, we're going to talk about the sex thing. And we're going to answer these questions and we're going to talk about what would you do that I don't think you would do. And this doesn't have to be nastiness or anything like that. Or it can, whatever's safe and whatever you decide you want to do in a marriage, that's your own thing. But maybe one of them is talking about that. Maybe 3 months down the road, in 3 months, we're going to talk about this thing and you get amped up for it. And you start getting the questions ready and you're saying, okay, in the next 3 months, we're going to talk about what can we do better on our next vacation? What can we do better in the bedroom? What could we do better as, what could you do better as parents? What can we do better? You know, all these things. And you're just getting that lined up, ready to go. It's a really cool, but I think the problem is you cannot let that pass. You put that in the calendar and you
unbreakable commitment.
You have to.
Yeah. And that's a great feedback. Have you heard of the Mojo Upgrade?
No.
So Mojo Upgrade is a really cool survey. You go take it and asks you like 50 questions about what you are interested in or not interested in the bedroom. You can say like yes, no, or if my partner's open to it, I'm open to it. Mm-hmm. And then you send the same survey to them. And then when they complete it, it only shows you the things that you guys agreed on.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
So you can see like these are all the things that we both are interested in trying or doing or exploring. And it's like a really cool way to have the conversation without having to like stare at each other and ask each other questions that you might be uncomfortable asking.
Because husbands know out there when you want to explore something new, and you know, I'm a pastor and it's really hard sometimes to like, should I say this? I'm going to say it. But sometimes when you want to explore something new, you kind of joke about it first. You're like, just to gauge.
Yeah, would you be okay if I busted out candle wax? Like, are you?
You know? I'm gonna go get a 9-iron, some ice cubes. Yes. What do you think about that?
I got these jumper cables, and
just hear me out. But then you do it. So, guys, I do that as a joke to gauge. But this thing here is for some people who don't even want to talk about that stuff.
Yeah,
it can be detrimental. Not detrimental, but man, think of the things
it's
you're
just
missing.
Uncomfortable.
Yeah, but think of the things you could be missing that your wife doesn't even want to talk about.
Yeah.
You could be missing massive opportunities here to do some crazy fun things
that she's curious about, but you just are too scared to bring it up. Yeah. Don't let fear stand in the way of your marriage. And get like, if your wife is constantly turning you down for sex, instead of asking for her for sex, ask her what would make her enjoy sex. Mm-hmm. That one question alone. Hey, what could I do to make, instead of can I have sex from you? You could say, what could I do to provide you with a really satisfying sexual experience?
Yeah.
What could I do that could make this sexual experience so amazing and mind blowing for you that you just would be the happiest woman on the planet right now? And let her spell it out for you. I would love it if I could just like put the kids to bed, take a nice long bath. If you could, you know, light some candles for me, and then when I'm done, you could give me a massage using that awesome massage oil that we got. And you know, you could spend some time on me. Whatever she says, give her that thing.
She might say, "Hey, get the 9 iron, the ice cubes."
She might
and the
say,
jumper
get the
cables,
nine.
And you're like, "Whoa, yes,
the bathtub finally. Full of Jello."
A lot of the things I asked, you know, how can we be better husbands? That's easy because we can just say like just preventative maintenance. Here's a question we have a lot. What the hell is wrong with women? And I say this because this is a bad question.
I'm trying hard not to laugh because,
but like,
it's okay to laugh.
So, how do I get better with this? So, men who don't I say this to say there's nothing wrong with women, but how do we understand them more sometimes? And we have, you know, you can do the mojo thing, you can do the weekly thing, but for guys who don't understand women and say, "What the hell's wrong with you?" But it's generally something wrong with us. How do we kind of navigate that? Who do we talk to? Where do we find help on that type of thing? You know, where do we go to say we don't know and we need to know?
Talk to her.
Right. But yeah, what if you don't want to? I'm not saying you should, and I'm saying yes, you should. But let's say you're just not there yet. Okay. Let's just say some women aren't open to talking about that stuff.
Okay.
And it does exist.
When you say that stuff, what are you referring to?
Anything. Anything that you really have. You're like, I'm struggling with this. It could be in the bedroom. It could be as parents. It could be anything that you're pissing you off. Anything.
The things that cause conflict.
Yes.
That's what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a good question. What the hell is wrong with women? So if you're asking yourself that question right now, my guess is that you've realized that the thing that you think is wrong is probably not the thing that's wrong.
Right, right.
And this is a human behavior thing. I would argue that women have been raised to be a little bit more emotionally intelligent than a lot of men. And so a lot of guys get married and then they find themselves in this position where they have to kind of like develop this emotional intelligence, and it's not always a super easy and straightforward thing to do. But the research of Sue Johnson, which is really awesome, she wrote a book called Hold Me Tight. One of the things that she talks about is how most conflicts are like an iceberg, and the thing that you're fighting about, the thing that you see on the surface, is really representative of something that runs much deeper. So when she's really mad at you from getting home late from work and she's giving you the silent treatment and she's frustrated and like clanking dishes really loud because you said you'd be home at 5:30 and you got home at 6:15 and you feel like you're getting the silent treatment and she's being passive aggressive and you're like, "What the hell is wrong with my wife? I was out working and providing for the family and I got called into a last minute meeting and now here I am in the doghouse because I did what I had to do to make ends meet for our family." What she's really mad about is not that you were late. And she probably doesn't even know this, but it's good to start learning how to kind of crack this egg. What she's really mad about or frustrated about is she's asking herself the question, "Can I rely on you?"
Right.
When things get tough and I really need you to be there for me, are you going to be there or are you going to be at work or are you going to be somewhere else?
Yeah.
You know,
that's important.
When she's frustrated because she asked you to mow the lawn and she asked you 2 days ago and it still hasn't been mowed and it's like 7 o'clock at night and she sees you watching the game and the lawn's still not mowed and she yells at you and stands in front of the TV and you're like, "Oh, what the heck? I'll get to it." What she's not mad at is that you haven't mowed the lawn. What she's mad at is, "I want to be able to trust you. I want to be able to trust that when you say you're going to do something, you're going to do it because that means I can rely on you when things get really tough." So we have these innate desires as human beings to have that one person in our life that we can count on, that we can rely on, that we know that they're going to be there for us no matter what. And a lot of these surface level arguments that get us really frustrated and worked up are actually manifestations of these deeper fears that we don't have. It's hard for us to communicate. Mm-hmm. So I think a really great thing to start practicing is when you're in the doghouse, when you're frustrated, when your partner's upset with you and you're confused about their behavior, take a step back and see if you can look below the surface a little bit and see if like the thing that you don't understand is really like, of course you don't understand it because it's the top of the iceberg. The thing that's really the problem is the thing underneath the water. And what is it that my partner really needs? And a lot of the times what they need is just like a hug, some reassurance. They need to hear I love you no matter what. I'm going to be here. You can trust me. I'll take care of the thing that you're worried about. I'm sorry that I dropped the ball and made you feel like I wasn't going to be there for you. I'm here. And yeah. when you can repair that hurt, when you can address that deeper issue, the surface level issues disappear.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely.
It answers one of my wife's questions as to why I haven't painted the trim in the house yet. So,
because you don't care about her deeper issues.
No, it's not that. It's I really hate paint and trim, but she really wants it done, and I think I'm failing her in that way. So yeah. I got to get on that.
Get her done.
Can I count on?
Get her
done. But even if you just say, "Hey, I realize that this is sending you the message that you can't rely on me. I'm sorry. Like, I want you to be able to rely on me. I'm going to set a due date, and either I'm going to get this taken care of, or I'm going to hire somebody else to take care of it because I know it's important to you."
Right.
Dude, you totally get some if you
say that. I got to get on it. I can do it, though. That's the thing. I got to do it.
All right, go ahead.
All right, Nate, question. Advice for some guys who might think that... Sorry.
So they're like in a...
Yeah, I know. I just can't see it.
Sorry. Phrase it how you want to say it, though.
Yeah. Okay. Nate, do you have a piece of advice for guys who think that they can't get out from where they are right now? Like, if they're unhappy, so...
Like, the next step for them is, like, divorce. Like, they think that there's no way back.
Yeah.
Back from what?
From, like, the crappiest marriage that they think that they're in right now.
A guy that wants to, like, thinks the next step is basically give up.
Yeah.
You got advice for that guy?
This is what I would say to that guy. The marriage you have is the marriage you have chosen.
Or you made, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have made the marriage that you have by making specific choices to get yourself here.
Right.
If you want a different marriage, if you want a better marriage... Make different choices. Make better choices.
So
you can transform your marriage by transforming yourself. But in order for a relationship to remain miserable, two people have to agree that they're going to interact with each other in a way that creates a miserable marriage. The moment that you start changing your behavior and the way that you engage with your partner, and you start engaging with them in a way that facilitates an amazing marriage, your partner has two choices. They level up and meet you where you're at, or they choose to leave, not you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yeah. I for any man who's in a position, unless there's abuse in the marriage, which is very possible, and I'm talking like, you know, your wife has made it very clear she's done. Mm-hmm. In one way or another, through her actions or through her words. Unless that's the case, I have a lot of confidence that you can turn it around. If you get really committed to making a long-term positive change to your choices and your behavior.
Yeah, that's cool. Man, holy smokes. This is really cool. Like, there's some really, really great, like, tidbits here. Some big aha moments for me and you.
You were saying make the little choices, right? Make little... How did you phrase that?
It's the little things done often that make the difference.
Yeah, so what I can see is that it could make the difference in both directions because you could do a lot of little dumb things and make the difference. It's two sides to that.
Absolutely. If you think about just the simple concept of trust, what is trust? To me, trust is a whole bunch of promises made and kept over time. Mm-hmm. The more promises you make and keep, the more trust you build with somebody. How easy is it to break trust? It's one broken promise, especially if it's a big promise. Mm-hmm. And that trust goes away. And the only way to rebuild it, make and keep your promises. So if you have a habit of not keeping your promises, and then you wake up one day, 3 years down the road, and your wife is like, "I don't trust you. Mm-hmm. You need to leave." That trust didn't just like disappear overnight. It was a thousand small, "Oh, I promise I'll take out the trash," and you don't take out the trash. Mm-hmm. "Oh, I'll take care of mowing the lawn," you don't mow the lawn. "Oh yeah, I'll call you when I get there," and you don't call them when you get there. Like the little things add up, man.
Yeah,
you
know? It's disrespectful.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is cool. So tell me, like, we kind of dove into your brain, and this is a lot of really great. I mean, imagine you've read tons of books, you've got lots of sage advice. Tell us about tell us about the Loveumentary. Tell us about a little bit what you do. This is your chance to plug what's going on in your world so that people can connect with you, because part of this is that, like, you know, if you're looking for something, you know, you've got something going here on your website and your blog and your podcast, and we want to know a little bit more about it.
Thanks, man. So one of the things that I put together recently that I'm really excited about is a 7-day love challenge called the Legendary Love Challenge. If you go to legendarylovechallenge.com, you can check it out. And the way it works is we're trying to give people the experience of little things done often over a 1-week period. Mm-hmm. And okay. we'll talk about like a concept that like one of the concepts we talk about in the challenge is the growth mindset, what I started off this interview talking about. Mm-hmm. And then we give you like a couple of little things that you can do that day to implement what you've learned.
Okay.
And so after the 7 days, after you've complete the challenge, you should see a transformation, small or many people have experienced large transformations over just 7 days of putting in 10 minutes of effort into your relationship. It's very awesome. Cool.
This is cool for those guys who think that they're totally, you know, like just illiterate in love, illiterate in being a husband. And like, so this is like, you know what, if that's who you are, and that could be you, here's a thing where you can literally get it force fed to you. Like, it's like a coach to be like, here's what you do, bro. Imagine like, you know, when you're a teenager and you're looking, you don't know love yet. You're asking your friend who's dated 100 girls, you know, how do you get girls? How do you talk to girls? This is kind of that way. You're like, here's how you'd be a better husband. And I'm going to like literally give you the tools that you need.
Exactly. And the thing that I love about the Legendary Love Challenge right now, and this might change soon, so if your listeners are listening to this close to release date, take advantage of this now. But the way we have it set up is you pay $60 to do the challenge. And at the end of the challenge, after the 7 days are over, if you complete the challenge, we give you your $60 back.
Oh, that's so cool.
How do you know if they completed the challenge?
We have them do, they have homework assignments every day. And so we just keep tabs on whether or not they're logging on and doing their homework.
Wow.
And at the end of
the 7 days, Jeff. We're doing it.
So
We're doing it.
The dope thing is like, okay, think about in your life, every area of your life that you want to become excellent or you've pursued excellence, there's been a system of accountability. If you want to be awesome at a sport, you have a coach who watches for your weaknesses and tries and helps you become better. If you want to learn an instrument, you get a teacher who can mentor you and like challenge you and teach you new techniques and stuff. If you're at your job, you have a boss who sets expectations for you. And if you hit those expectations, you get promoted or you get a raise or you at least get paid. But in your marriage, there is rarely a sense of a system of accountability. There's nobody holding you accountable to doing those little things that make your marriage work every day. And for 7 days, by doing this challenge, you get that accountability. You put $60 on the line, and I will reward you by giving you your $60 back if you just do 10 minutes of work on your marriage every day for 7 days.
Wow. That's pretty cool, man. I'm not gonna lie. That's amazing.
I love it.
Thanks.
That's super cool.
So that's probably the coolest thing. If people want to check out what I'm up to, that's a good place to start. Or check out the podcast. That's another really great resource. But
where do you find it? What's it called?
It's the Lovumentary. So just lovumentary.com.
Yeah.
And I have conversations like this every single week. And we talk about how to be better husbands, better wives, better partners, how to develop these skills, flex those relationship muscles, get in the reps so that you can have a freaking awesome marriage.
That was really cool, man. Dude, Nate, you've been like, this has been like one of those episodes that I'm like, I'm going to listen to like 400 times.
Dude, I see what I missed.
We're challenging each other. Jeff and I are going to challenge each other. Generally, our challenges are stupid. Like, who can gain the most weight in 3 days and like who can like win the scratch tickets.
Not doing wonders for our marriage.
Yeah,
that's
not helping. But this one here is like, it's less about a competition and more about like, we're going to do that. I'm going to try it because, you know, I've got some travel coming up, but I want to be able to do it for 7 days. So I'm going to lock into a 7 day moment. Jeff works, he's a firefighter, so he does 24-hour shifts where he's away from home.
Yeah, but I just got to be on the computer, I can do that.
Yeah, you could do the text thing. So there's lots of things you could do, even if you do have a job that takes you away from the house. Like, we want to talk about those things and just get into that. So we're going to do your challenge. We're going to do it, man.
And baller,
we're gonna,
man.
We're gonna
you're going to love it. I would love to hear what you guys think about it.
Yeah. And you know what? Maybe once we're done, I'll have you back on and talk about what we thought was like, hey, this was like super crazy eye-opening.
I would love that. Dude, it's been really... This is one of those rare instances where I'm on a podcast and I feel like I just love hanging out with you guys. So anytime you want to have me back, you just let me know.
Yeah, man. We definitely want to come down to Salt Lake City and talk to and see about the culture and everything else. We love it. We love everything about marriages.
All the missionaries.
Our sons are 17 and 16. So we got some, you know, if you got some ladies that are Instagram models, we're happy to,
I'm on
to pimp them out. But so here's the thing. We just want to, again, thank you so much for coming on, talking to us about this amazing, this really cool thing. And it's cool because I actually reached out. Our wives are taking over the podcast and doing basically this same thing where they're going to talk about this, what we talk about. We're going to talk about with another, I forget her name, but she's actually one who said, check out Nate. And we, I was like, cool. Instantly checked you out. Aww. And then, like, so you got some people who are your fans who are in the same world that you live in, are like, you need to check this guy out. And so we did, and we just were super impressed with what you do. We're super excited about how you're doing that, and that you're living it, and you're living the example. And I think that inspires a lot of guys to just to take this next step. So guys who listen to our podcast know that we're not scared to talk about that stuff, and we're trying to open that conversation. Don't be afraid to cry. Don't be afraid to talk. Don't talk about your feelings, and really get into that. What I'm excited about is the weekly checklist thing, and say, hey, what can we do better this week? I'm really, really pumped about doing that. And my wife is going to be super pumped about that kiss she gets every day, because I can't walk by my wife in the hallway without getting accosted. And she loves that stuff. It's just not how I need to express it. And I think that's, I'm not going to tell her I'm doing it until she, because she doesn't listen to our podcast anyway, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to see what it does. I'm going to tell you what it does. I'm actually going to probably film some of these things, and we're going to put it on our Instagram.
I would love that. That sounds so great.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks so much, Nate. It's great. Every time I finish these podcasts where I talk to somebody who's way smarter than me, I always have these things that I got to go and fix.
We
gotta
now
fix so many
have
things.
Absorbed his
Jeff, go paint the trim, man.
I got to paint the trim. I'm going to hopefully get some kisses.
Yes, kisses.
And
kisses.
Get those spark plugs. put a little styrofoam on them.
All right, man. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Thanks, Nate.
Okay, so wow, that was another one of those interviews, just like, yep, I needed to hear like a ton of that stuff.
Yeah, and I want to apologize to Trish for the things I said at the beginning. Because
we're going to get to that.
I'm saying it now because I want to get out of the way before I forget.
Yeah, you don't want to forget.
I am sorry. We can talk about more of it, but I'm sorry.
Okay.
You know why?
Also.
Because my happiness shouldn't come from her being on time.
Trish, but I just want to, you know, from Jeff's friend to you, wouldn't it be really cool, though, to just be like, Jeff, what would make you happy today? And he says, to be on time. And you'd be like, let's do this. And then you're ready before him. Anyway.
All right.
You know what? Here's some cool, really cool tidbits I took from that. Stop pursuing happiness. Pursue your growth. We don't even think about that. We don't. And so many people are pursuing, even if it's like with happiness, with the things you're getting.
Yeah.
New cars, new clothes,
yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
For sure.
Up with the Joneses, you think that makes a happy marriage? That's such a fail.
No. You being a better person and working on that. Yeah, absolutely.
You're so happy.
How many things do we talk about and it keeps coming back to basically similar things,
yes,
right?
It really does.
Yeah.
These are some simple principles that we just don't talk about.
If you're looking at other people and thinking that there's something wrong with them, you should probably take a closer look at yourself.
Or vice versa. If you think, oh, we're not as bad as them.
Yeah.
And you probably are.
Sure.
I think, yeah. I judge people who are like, you know what, here's the thing, as a human, I think we all do this. You judge people for doing things that you do too.
Oh, probably.
And you judge them harsher because you do them
probably
too.
Probably, because you hate that in yourself. Yes,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's kind of a reflection.
I don't want to think about that though.
One more thing before, you know, use the obstacles and the issues that you're coming up against as growth benchmarks, not like stoppages. So you're saying, we know we're going to get over this, we're going to be stronger for it. So it's a growth. We did that bad thing. We did this thing we argued about. We came to this dead stop and we got over it. And now that's a benchmark of growth.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. One thing I liked was that crossover with Dr. Kirk Honda. He was talking about the recovery. It was the same sort of thing. You get in a scrap, like we were talking about anger before, right? And how you recover from getting mad. If you get in an argument or if you say something that's upsetting, can you recover from that? Or are you just going to let it stew and ruin, you know, days to come because all you're thinking about is that? And then you basically start reflecting even little things off of that and makes you more and more mad.
There's a lot in there. Like, oh my goodness. Like, so here's the challenge. We are going to do his thing.
Why wouldn't we?
Drop the city bones.
Yeah, but we get it back.
My wife loves kisses. She loves touch. So for me to actually do that once a day, passionate kiss every day, like I don't even know if I've ever done that.
No.
Every day. Like a kiss, we'll do kisses here and there, pecks and all that stuff. Not a passionate boom. See, she gets up before I do for work. I'm going to make sure I get up before she gets out the door and give her that passionate kiss, send her off. I think she's going to be like, mm-hmm. I think there's going to be more things in the flesh department because of it. I'm not saying that's the end goal. I'm just saying that it helps.
Gonna make a withdrawal from the flesh bank.
That sounds like it could be a...
I didn't mean it that way. You know what I mean.
But I mean, so that's one thing I really thought that was really cool. That he's like, this is what I do. Yeah. He just, everything he thinks, it's like, you see a lot of guys who are probably listening to that interview rolling their eyes like, oh my God, no one does that in a marriage. Okay, so you're probably right, but why don't you just try it? Yeah. Maybe you don't sit down every week and do an inventory of what the crap you did wrong or what you did right.
Week, but he even suggested, like, you know, if you do it like every 3 months, start small. It was the same thing. He said, mm-hmm. you know, like he was saying, you know, say 10 nice things to your wife a day or that. But yep. And then you said, ooh, 10. And he's like, no. Start small. Mm-hmm. Start with one.
Yep.
I'm going to do this one thing today, you know, and then you can go up to two. So the inventory on the marriage, it doesn't have to be every week like he's doing.
I say do that. That's a 3 month mark.
He's like a guru right now. Yeah. So it's probably because it's like small now. He's got it to like such a science yeah. that he can go, hey, also, you know, we can do this every week. Yeah, he doesn't have kids too. Yeah, so just wait, Nate.
Yeah, let's see how your weekly thing happens there, bruh. for me, a lot of the habit tracker, very cool thing because I love tech. Habit tracker app, perfect. Let it ding 5 minutes before your wife gets home and be like, ding, don't forget to, hey, you look really good today. Hey, I really loved that thing you did in the bedroom. No, I really like, you know, whatever. Gratitude. Yeah. Show gratitude if it is the ding for the kiss or if it's the ding for the, oh, I'm going to meet her at the door and just, you know, help her get her coat off. Yep. Something tiny.
Yep. Just make sure it's sincere. That would be my only yes. thing.
Don't do it out of habit because you have sincere. To do a habit. But I think if she sees that and you're like, I'm really just trying to do something nice for you. Yeah. A lot of guys who take this challenge, who have never done any of this, it's going to look insincere, but just try to just be your best at like, do it because you're doing it because you want to make your wife happier.
If your motivation is to make her happy, even if you use that tracker, that's still sincere.
It really is.
That's sincere.
She sees that you're trying. What do you think she's going to say? Even if you didn't tell her, what do you think she would say if she found out you're using a tracker to help make your life? Women would just love that, dude. They would be like, thank you. You know, you're trying. Like, just even the idea of just trying something helps, like, I think with women specifically, and men aren't like this, not generally, but they're like, you know, he's making an effort. She's going to tell her friends, you're going to be a rock star at all the friends. That's what's going to happen. I love the idea of hack your wife. It's so easy to actually do this. What makes you happy? And I will do those things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? All the time, but it's like, what makes you happy? What can, you know, what can I do? Like, guys who are struggling in the bedroom, who are doing things that are like, you can't figure this out. Do the Mojo upgrade survey. I'm going to do that. I'm going to answer the questions, I'm going to send it to my wife, and I want to see. I really do want to see what she comes back with.
Yeah.
I think a lot of men will be very surprised out there.
Yeah.
What their wife is willing to do if you're willing to do it.
Hmm.
Like sexually or even the Mojo upgrade is for sex, obviously. And fine, you should do it. And I think I haven't done it. I've been looking for it. And now that I have the name of it, I'm excited.
So you knew that existed?
I did. I just didn't know what it was called.
I was
looking online. I couldn't find it. But honestly, do that with a bunch of things. You can do a survey on like what makes you happy that I do. And you can have your own questions and just say like, I remember hearing somebody talk about this one time. He's like, what makes your marriage successful? He says, my wife has a non-negotiable. I want to make sure that you do this thing. And it was, I think hers was, when you get home, come see me, tell me about your day. And his was, my non-negotiable is when I get home, I'd love to come home to a clean house. Right? And it sounds like, I know that's so patriarchal or whatever you want to call it. It's old school, but they're old. He was old.
Yeah.
And he's like, and she was happy to do that for him because it made him happy. And he loved coming home to a clean house. Not because he was being like, this is how it goes. He's like, I really am happy when I come home to a clean house. It helps me relax. Hmm. And she's like, I'm really happy when you come in and you take your shoes off and your first thing is to come over to me and give me a kiss and tell me about your day. Like, there's things. And he's like, these are our non-negotiables. These are things that we do for each other that we've asked for.
Wow.
And they do them for each other. Right? I'm not saying I do that, but I'm just saying that was one thing you could do.
So that's one example of a relationship that got to a point where that's what they were agreeing on, right?
Learn to apologize. Hit me pretty hard.
Oh, man. It's pride.
Dude.
You got to get over your pride, man.
It's so hard.
I know.
I can probably count on two hands the amount of times I apologized to my wife after a fight. Like in 11 years.
Don't you dare forget what Dr. Kirk Honda said.
What did he say?
He said it's manly to apologize.
I know.
Because you put yourself out there.
Yeah, you're being vulnerable.
It's a scary thing.
It is.
And you make yourself vulnerable.
You're manning up. And I think that, but at the same time, like, because I've not been able to apologize for a lot. And I do once I'm wrong. I'm like, yeah. And if I know I did it, I'm like, I'm sorry. And so, and the same thing, Kathy's very much more like passive than I. She's very much the opposite of me. But in saying that, I can count on two hands the amount of times she's apologized to me.
Okay.
I'm not saying even if she was wrong. So, and it's only those big things. I'm not saying you have to apologize for everything. But like, man, that's going to be a hard one to do. But I'm going to actually attempt it. I'm really going to do this. So for 7 days, when we get back, let's do that. let's do the thing that we say we're going to do. That's one thing, and we'll keep each other accountable. Hey, did you do that thing today? Text, hey, did you kiss? Did you do? Or maybe do two things, because we're pretty badass. We are high-level dudes.
High-level.
So what are you going to do?
What things will I do? I should probably do a note thing. I don't know if I'll do it on the mirror, because...
Text, maybe?
Yeah.
Especially for the few days that you're away.
Handwritten note, too, though.
That's a good idea.
I leave them places. And I do that sometimes, but I haven't done it for a while.
Good.
And I like when I do it. I like...
So on the days that you're away for the 24-hour periods, put them somewhere, and then text her a little...
A little clue?
A little clue to the end thing. So you're leaving notes, and then the end thing's a gift. That's a good idea.
Okay, but I'm gonna use one of the hiding spots she already knows about.
Yes.
So that I don't give away my location and my chips. Put
her favorite treat in there.
No,
favorite treat.
No, she'll eat them anyways.
But that's the whole thing. You're gonna be gone for that day. Okay. In the morning, say, when you get home, you get three clues and it lands her in her favorite treat. Okay? You do that.
And I think what I'm gonna do too, I think the other one is when I come home, I wanna go find her and like give her a hug or the kiss or whatever. Yep. I don't know.
You want a passionate kiss, bro.
I know, but sometimes when I come home from work, she says I smell like garlic. I don't think she'll want a passionate kiss me then.
Pop a gum before you get in the house.
Get some gum in there.
Pop the gum before you pop in.
Maybe some, what are the Curiously Strong mints? I might need one of those. Altoids.
Do it, man. Pop an Altoid and get in there and be like, babe, I did this Altoid for you. And give her the old razzle dazzle and let the kids be all embarrassed and freaked out about it. So that's what we're doing. My wife is going to really respond to that touch, I think. Big time. And then the notes in the mirror. Or I might just do the notes thing myself, too. Just like leave one in the car or something. I like that idea. The notes is easier. Mm-hmm. The mirror thing's not so easy because she gets up super early. So I think I'm going to do the notes thing, too, in the kiss. So we're both doing the same thing.
Okay.
But we're not going to actually release this episode so that they can't even hear this until next week. So we can get this thing done in a week.
All right.
So you do your week.
Yep.
I'll do what I got to do.
Okay.
Because maybe I'll do it because I'm away. Anyway, we'll figure it out. But I'm very excited about this. This challenge is like not who's winning, but this challenge, we're both going to win. Our marriages are going to win.
Yeah. See, this is the thing. The challenge doesn't always have to be like it's... I think you're confusing the word challenge. It's Dad Challenge Podcast. Yes. We're challenging dads. It's not the Dad Competition Podcast. It doesn't have to be a competition all the time, right?
I think it's being a dad, it can be a challenge.
Yeah. Life is challenging.
Yeah. You're right.
And there's challenges within that.
Yeah.
See, we just had epiphanies.
We're just epiphanizing right now.
Okay, so I truly do kind of feel bad about that shallow crap that we said at the beginning about those things. You feel it too?
Yeah, so here's
especially the question. Especially after talking to Nate.
Right.
Because his wife's going to some like Pampered Chef party right now and saying he's stud.
The bomb.
Yeah,
he's the stud. All her friends like him.
Well, for sure, because, I mean, and you know what? Kudos to him, man. That's...
He had a
big
plan
task.
And he executed
it. He had a plan, he executed it, and guaranteed it's easier every day because he's living that, right?
It's a habit you put yourself into and it just becomes, man, that's just, it was a really cool thing to achieve, I think.
Yeah.
So that being said, I think we ended a Hate Me Teenager episode. We need to end this episode on a positive note of encouragement of like, to dads out there listening, husbands, be better at what you do and don't be... And you know what? At this point, don't feel guilty that you haven't done any of this stuff because there's always time to do it. There's always time to turn everything around and do something different and watch what changes because you have a benchmark to start from and then you can see what happens, right? I think just do it. Just do it. Who cares if she does it or not? Just do it yourself and see what happens.
Yeah.
And then...
And instead of relying on our human being wives to be the people that... Or the thing that makes us happy, they do things that make us happy, do they not?
Yes.
My wife does, absolutely. For sure. What's the thing that Kathy does that makes you happy? What's she good at?
Kathy is good at being a freaking amazing mom.
Yeah.
Okay, so I had an epiphany a few years back. The kids were born. The boys had moved in. And it was before Weston was born. I don't know. You've had those moments you look at your wife in a different light for some whatever reason. She was just doing something. She was being a super mom, cooking with the baby on her hip, just being a good mom, like singing to her or whatever. And this is the one time this has ever happened. And it's going to sound bad and good, but I literally re-fell in love with her. Like it was just like, like I saw her in a new light. I'm like, oh my gosh, this woman is like so good. It wasn't sexual. It wasn't anything like, it wasn't a light. It wasn't cleavage. It wasn't anything like, it was just like, dang it. She's so good.
You're just in love with her.
She's so good. I was like, oh my gosh, how did I friggin' luck out? Like, I know that I lucked out. I married way above my station. But that was a moment where I'm like, this woman is a good mom. Kathy sings to her kids. Kathy, like, is loving. Even times where I've had major blow-ups with, like, Tyson, for example, she's always there to be like, nope, you cannot, he doesn't deserve this. And she always roots for the underdog. Kathy always roots for the underdog.
Yeah.
Always. Even if it's against me. So she's always looking for the good in things. And I'm always like cynical and always like pissed off at the world. And she's always bringing me back to that. Like, you know, even the things that really piss me off, but like the things that used to really, really bug me have become endearing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so there's just a lot of things that I really, really love about her that she puts up with my garbage. Like the stupid jokes I continue to tell all of her friends that she's heard a million times. She'll still laugh. You know, she definitely is like, I look at it and I'm like, there's absolutely no way I could live without this woman. No, I would be a wreck if anything ever happened to my wife or she left me or whatever. I don't know what I would do. I cannot see myself with anybody else. And it's been 11 years. That's a long time to be with somebody. Yeah. And I'm like, I had a dream the other day that we got a divorce or something happened. It was one of those really realistic, really, really, really real dreams. And I even woke up stressed. I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, I can't even, that was just one of those moments to be like, there's no way I can live without my wife. No way. So Kathy, if you're listening, which you probably aren't, you got to know that you are the best part about me.
Yeah.
And I'm so super, very lucky to have you in my life. What about you?
Yeah, Trish has some of those, you know, little quirky things that are endearing, like you said. Like, I think when some of them come out, I kind of act like I'm annoyed, but that's almost kind of the game, right? Like,
yep.
One, the poor girl cannot remember a lyric to a song to save her life. But...
Dude, can you please promise me you're going to record her doing this one time, please?
Please. It's hilarious. Okay, like, good. She likes to sing, has not a clue. Like... And it's like, sometimes like, I know it's a podcast, you can't see my face, but sometimes she'd be like, I'll just be looking at her like, what the heck are you saying? It's like, it's not even close. It doesn't even make sense. But you know what? There's something that I like about it. It's funny, right? And she even knows she's doing it sometimes, and then she'll start to even make it more ridiculous. And I'm just like, oh, that's brutal. And she also, she messes up sayings. So like,
like Ricky from Trailer Park Boys?
Kind of, yeah. Like
Trishisms.
One of the ones that I can like pick right off the top of my head was she was talking about somebody who was making money for something. She said, "That guy is raking in a killing."
Love it. You need to quote these and put them on our Instagram.
Yeah, they're so good. So I mean, that kind of stuff. And you know what? It's super cute. Yeah. And when I think about it, it totally makes me smile. And I would never want to not have that, right?
Yep.
So, but really though. Man, I complained about that crap at the beginning, and I mean, that's nothing compared to like the good that she is.
The good that outweighs all of it.
It outweighs all of it. And the way she is with anybody, she's friendly to everybody, and I'm not. And I think that probably is something, that's probably something that she'll complain about me. Mm-hmm. I can sometimes come across as not friendly, and she'll tell me that, and she makes me better by doing that, but even though it's tough to hear. Mm-hmm. But how she can talk to anybody is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And another thing is just how forgiving she is. I've been married to her 17 years. Guaranteed it's been harder on her than it's been on me. And her heart is just open to forgive me every single time I do something stupid. Mm-hmm. And that, like, that grace and compassion that she has even for me when I'm probably the person that upsets her the most. Like, forget about happiness. I definitely upset her more than anybody. Mm-hmm. For sure I do.
Yep.
And yeah, when I think about it now, it kind of breaks my heart, because I mean, do I want to be happy? Sure I do. But I really want her to be happy. Like, mm-hmm. why do you want to marry somebody if it's not to make them happy too, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, Trish is awesome that way. She has easily improved me. Like, I'm still not great, but she has improved me. So I mean, that's kudos to her. She had a tough project to work with, so
you were her baseboards, but she completed them.
Oh man, hurts. I gotta get those done.
Dang baseboards done, bro. Trish, I got you back here, Trish.
I love you.
We'll get her done.
I'm here doing a podcast instead of painting baseboards.
Man, this was good. I think a lot of dudes need to hear this podcast and then rehear it, and then check out Nate Bagley's stuff at the Love You Mentry.
I can't believe that if you do the 7-day thing, you get your money back. Like, that's killer. Why would you not do it?
Skin in the game, bro.
But why would you not do it?
Do it. You should do it. Go do it.
Even if your marriage is pretty good, do it. Make it better.
Make it like rock star marriage. Some guys I look at who have, like, I know they clearly have amazing marriages. I'm like, yes, I want that there. And then I look at some friends. I have some friends of mine who are like super, like, sometimes I'm like, how do you make it work? How, what's going on here?
Yeah.
I'm reaching out to those guys who specifically, they might know who I'm talking about, but I'm like, man, like, I'm here for you too. I'm here for you, Jeff. I'm here for my friends. If you ever want to talk about something and you need a bro to talk to about your marriage, just to encourage you, reach out to your bros. That is what other dads, you need to get in a circle of dads. Get your circle of dads or men. I don't care. You need to get guys that you can speak to, vent to, and also that can kick your ass and say, dude, stop being a dickweed and get in there and fix your marriage.
Yeah. I love it.
Fix your marriage.
That's what we do.
Fix it. Oil change. Preventative maintenance. Boom.
Boom.
All right, Def. Or, Def. Jeff, where can they find us?
They can find us on the three majors. Go to Instagram. Go to Twitter. And go to, I can never remember all
Facebook.
Of them.
Are you serious?
Facebook?
Is that the still biggest exists? Social platform on earth.
Facebook?
But we don't want them to go there. We want to go to Instagram. If you're going to do anything, if you have a choice to make, it's Instagram. We're growing.
Listen to the podcast. Tell your friends. Yep. Say it every time.
Share it with
especially
your
ones like this. Ones
there's,
like this.
There's a subscribe button on Apple Podcasts at the top, okay? There's a little thing with dots, a little share button. You hit that. Text this. I challenge you dads out there to who maybe have a good marriage or maybe need to hear this podcast, just a specific one. Hit that share button and text them this episode.
Yeah.
And if you're listening to this podcast, I need you guys to like get on Instagram or Facebook us and say that you are, because we want to shout you out in here. We want to talk to you. We want to be like, thanks for checking us out. And we want to give your name out here and just like say thanks for being listeners, because we love you.
Absolutely.
We are the best. So it's good that you are tuning in to the best.
The best.
I'm just kidding. We're not the best, but we're all right.
Yeah.
We're decent. Yeah. All right. Peace.
See ya.